proceed to the sixth case, Wants versus Experian Info. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Your Honor. I please the court.
Good morning. My name is Larry Smith, and I represent the plaintiff, Brian Wants, in this matter. We are here challenging the district court's decision to find that the defendant, Experian, followed reasonable procedures in the reinvestigation process as a matter of law. The Fair Credit Reporting Act provides that upon notification from a consumer that there is an inaccuracy in their credit report, the credit reporting agency shall conduct a reasonable investigation. In addition to conducting a reasonable investigation, they are also to notify the provider of that information and have them participate in the investigation, and then within 30 days of the notice of the dispute from the consumer, report back to the consumer the result of the investigation. The investigation must be reasonable, and it is a question of fact, and it is a question for the trier of fact to determine whether or not the investigation was reasonable. In this instance, the district court decided for itself that the investigation was reasonable as a matter of law. The district court must then have weighed the evidence and made its own decision and based its own findings on facts before it. That was improper. The district court should have looked at the evidence, not weighed the evidence, but determined whether or not a reasonable mind can differ and find that the investigation was not reasonable. Reasonableness by its very nature is something that a fact finder should decide. For whatever reason, the district court departed from that. What one person might find as reasonable is not.
Well, what was the unreasonable part? They went, they find out that there's a judgment lien, right?
Yes.
And that was done by the, what's the name of the contractor?
I believe they're called Superior.
Superior.
Yes.
They do that, and that was a fact. It was a judgment lien.
There was a judgment. My client had a judgment with this company that was a time-sharing enterprise, and he did have a judgment against him. And he paid the judgment 1 year before he even found out that they were still reporting it as unpaid.
Well, then when he gets notified that the judgment wasn't released, I guess, or whatever would happen, what is he expected to do versus what is this company expected to do?
Well, my client, what he did was notify Experian, and that's what he is supposed to do. Now, what Experian is supposed to do...
Well, he's notifying the messenger.
He's notifying the credit reporting agency, who has the obligation...
Who stated a fact that there was a judgment lien.
That was outstanding and unpaid.
Yeah.
Which is not true. It was paid. It was paid 1 year before. Now, the credit reporting agency, Experian in this case, is under an obligation to investigate. And they're under free of charge, investigate into the accuracy of the report. In this instance, Experian, instead of doing some investigation of their own, Experian went to a company that they have a contract with and said to them, go look and tell us if it's been paid. And Experian expects that they're going to go to the court docket and look and see if it's been paid. And Experian, we put the testimony of one of the representatives into our briefs. The representative said that whatever we get back from that subscriber, from that company, that is what we're going to accept as true. So you have a consumer on one end saying, listen, this has been paid, and you have their subscriber on the other end saying, it's not. Experian will invariably accept that subscriber's version of the facts and go no further and do nothing of their own. Reasonable minds could have differed in this case and perhaps found, as many would, that perhaps they could have gone to the judgment creditor and said to the judgment creditor, have you been paid? But Experian opts not to do that. And it's actually a matter of policy. They don't go to the judgment creditor. They go to this company who they have a contract with. And they base their decision to accept that and consider that to be a reasonable investigation based upon that contract. Because that company has signed a contract with Experian to say, we'll do a reasonable investigation for you. So Experian accepts that and says, then it's reasonable whatever comes back. Well, you have somebody here who can likely prove that it's been paid. They didn't accept that. They wouldn't accept that. Which leads me into my argument about willful conduct and statutory damages. The statute was created. Obviously, Congress saw issues with respect to the credit industry and how powerful it was, and found that there needed to be some assistance to consumers. So they created this act to provide consumers with some rights and had to give it some teeth, because many times in a case just like this, people don't suffer an economic damage, though the law is violated. And in this case, my client admittedly did not apply for and get denied credit. But are we to say that unless you apply for and get denied credit, you suffer no damage whatsoever? The answer is absolutely not. That's why they created the portion that provides for a small but necessary statutory damage to give the consumer the right to take this kind of company to court or to challenge them or to challenge their procedures so that they will perhaps change their ways and conduct a reasonable investigation.
Well, let me put it in a different context. Because and one that's not as regulated, but if someone is going to purchase a piece of real estate and from a certain person, and they go and look and find out that there's a judgment lien on that real estate. Now, if someone said, well, that lien paid or something, but the reporting agent, they say the title company, they have an obligation to put that in there. So that somebody then has to check in further, either it was paid or to make sure it gets released or something. And it seems that here we have this, Experian is just stating a given fact, which is a detriment to the title. I mean, that as long as that judgment lien is still on the record, somebody's got to say so and say it's there, and it's a problem.
Right, but then what we're getting into is not the original reporting of it, because as Experian correctly pointed out, we didn't take that challenge up. It's not the original reporting of that lien. It's what happens when that person who's paid off the lien says, excuse me, you're still reporting I didn't pay it. And I did. I did pay this.
So what did they say? They should only report that there's a judgment lien?
They should report in this instance, to be completely accurate, to have maximum accuracy as the statute requires, they should report that a judgment has been paid and is not outstanding any further.
Well, but what do they do about the judgment lien? There's a judgment that has not been released, and it will show up on any title search or whatever else one goes into. So what are you say they have to go beyond that?
Well, beyond what?
Beyond reporting a fact that this is an unreleased judgment.
I don't think we are asking them to go beyond that. I think we're just asking them to make sure that what the reporting is in fact true. I mean, this is something that is harmful. There's no question about it. Nobody can deny that a judgment on somebody's credit report or a lien on property would be harmful. And we're just asking them to go find out whether or not what they're saying is true, because the law has been created to say that they must.
I guess the problem is that it is true that there's a judgment lien, and it is also true that it is perhaps shouldn't be there.
Right.
So
there was a judgment, and it has been satisfied, and it does not belong
and it
being reported
released.
As an unpaid judgment.
But it wasn't released. I don't. I guess I just wonder what Mr. Wants obviously went through some sort of a lawsuit and got a judgment and then paid it off. And now he's notified that even though he paid it off, that judgment hasn't been released. So what's he going to do?
I don't know that he's necessarily saying it's not released. What they're saying is it's unpaid. Not necessarily.
If they had said simply there's a judgment on the record, that would have, and not say that draw the conclusion that it wasn't paid, it just say there's a judgment.
I would argue to Your Honor that that's not maximum accuracy under the statute, because they must report with maximum accuracy, and that's not. They must report that judgment has been paid, so it can reflect that Mr. Wants is in fact what took responsibility for what had happened in the lawsuit and paid it. And that's important to future creditors who may look at his credit report, who unfortunately looked at his credit report.
What about another credit agency?
Sorry?
What about another reporting agency? There are a lot of these experiences.
There are a few, yes.
So what does the next one do?
What does the next one
do? Yeah, it looks, says there's a judgment out here.
If they are notified of a, if they are notified by my client, of a, by Mr. Wants, of his dispute, and he notifies them, they too must conduct an investigation. And they might have a different company who they contract with.
They're going to say the same thing.
Yeah, but I still, and that's why I find it troubling that at the very least they didn't call the judgment creditor to find out, in fact, if they've been paid this judgment. I see that I'm starting to dig into my rebuttal time, so I'd like to save some of that. Thank
very
you.
Very good, Mr. Smith. Mr. Romberg?
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'd like to first start off by clarifying the issues that are before this Court, because I think Mr. Smith may have inadvertently given the Court an incorrect impression of the lower court's decision. The lower court actually did not decide the reasonableness issue. That's an alternative ground that we have suggested, and we think it's sufficient to sustain the judgment. But what the lower court ruled was that the evidence that the plaintiff had submitted on both actual damages and willfulness was not sufficient to raise a genuine issue. And we think that the opinion below can be affirmed on that ground. Now, Judge Mannion, you've pointed to an issue with respect to the judgment that's a little bit unclear in the record, which is what exactly was the status of the judgment in the records of the Henrico County Court. It's not clear from the record. I don't think the plaintiff has shown any evidence, or at least they have not asserted in any of their briefs, either here or down below, that the judgment was actually released on the records of the Henrico County Court. But the actual records that are in the that have been attached are somewhat ambiguous on that ground, therefore, although we have advanced the technical accuracy argument, I think the point here is that the plaintiffs have failed to satisfy their burden of proving that there was any even technical inaccuracy in that instance. Because of this uncertainty, though, we would suggest that the court ought to be focusing on the issues that the trial court focused on, which is namely whether there were sufficient evidence of damages or willfulness. Now, I'd like to start with willfulness first, because here again I think that counsel on the other side has made a slight misrepresentation or inaccuracy as to the nature of the statute. I think he said that the statute provided that the source is to participate in the investigation. Actually, what the statute says, and I think it's in Section 623B, is that sources have a duty to conduct an investigation. That's an independent duty. It's not limited in any way by what the credit reporting agencies are doing. And it's very important to understand the structure to see what's wrong with plaintiff's argument that in all cases, credit reporting agencies are required to conduct their own investigation. The statute requires credit reporting agencies, once they receive evidence of a dispute, once a dispute is raised with them by a consumer, requires them to notify the source of that information. That's in Section 611. Then Section 623 requires that source to investigate and then to inform the credit reporting agency of the results of that investigation. Now, what plaintiffs are suggesting here is that although there is an explicit duty in every case for the source to conduct an investigation, there is an implicit duty in every case for the credit reporting agency to duplicate that investigation. That is not the statutory scheme. Congress did not require such an inefficient structure, and no court has ever suggested that it did. This court's decision in Henson indicated where there is evidence that the source that was used by the credit reporting agency is unreliable, then the credit reporting agency has to go beyond the source. And I think it's very important for this court to realize that the FTC has recognized, the FTC, which supervises the application of the FCRA, they have recognized.
The source is superior,
yes, Your Honor. It has said, and this is in 16 CFR Part 600, which are the general policy and interpretive statement of general policy or interpretations of the FTC on the FCRA. They have said that at a minimum, a reporting agency must check with the original sources or other reliable sources. No indication they must conduct an independent reinvestigation. And then it says, depending on the nature of the dispute, reinvestigation and verification may require more than asking the original source of the disputed information the same question and receiving the same answer. I think the implication here is clear that in the ordinary run-of-the-mill case, it's perfectly appropriate for a credit reporting agency to go back to the source and ask them to verify. That's the most efficient thing to do. And Congress was concerned about efficiency in the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Every cost that is imposed upon the credit reporting agencies, first of all, is multiplied millions of times. I checked with my client. My client processes disputes from 4 million customers each year, and they dispute approximately 9 million items. The cost of independently reinvestigating each of these items would be huge, and that cost would be passed on to consumers in the form of more expensive credit. Congress, I would submit, did not require that. Now, I think it's also important on the willfulness issue to realize that the standard is a very demanding one. Standard for willfulness is the same for punitive as well as statutory damages. And as the Cushman case, which I think is one of plaintiff's primary authorities on another issue, as it recognizes, in order to show willful misconduct, it is necessary to show intentional concealment, intentional misrepresentation, or something of that level. I would submit that the record in this case clearly shows that there was nothing of that level. There was no conscious disregard of the rights of the plaintiff in this case. The plaintiff asked to have his report reinvestigated on June 25, 2002. He objected to 9 items. Each of them were reinvestigated promptly, and 3 of them were corrected.
So
several months.
Let me just get to the bottom line here. If we affirm on the willfulness and affirm on the damages, the whole unreasonableness of the investigation, which in your view the court didn't really even address that issue, you win. Is that right?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And we believe the court can rule on that ground alone. Now, with respect to the actual damages, I think this court's precedents are very clear that conclusory statements of mental distress or humiliation are not sufficient. There is a narrow exception that was carved out that applies only in egregious cases where there is inherently degrading or humiliating conduct, such as sexual harassment or racial discrimination. The failure to correct a credit report, I would submit, simply does not raise to that level. And arguing that there is such a presumption would be inconsistent with the statute. It would be inconsistent, number one, because the statute requires for negligent violations, it requires actual, not presumed damages. And that's important because in common law, a plaintiff alleging defamation could seek presumed damages. Congress wanted to prevent that from happening in the Fair Credit Reporting Act because it made a cost-benefit analysis. It decided that the benefit of allowing people who had minor or potentially frivolous damage claims to go to trial was far outweighed by the cost to the credit system and to consumers of doing so. Furthermore, Your Honors, Congress provided a remedy when somebody is unsuccessful in seeking a revision of their credit reporting. They are able to submit a consumer dispute statement. That's 611B of the statute. Now, I would here again submit that if Congress had thought that the procedures, which in large part it has designed and the FTC oversees, if it had thought that they were inherently humiliating or degrading, it would have done much more than simply providing for a consumer dispute statement. Your Honors, I've been here for quite a while this morning. Unless you have any further questions, we would ask you to affirm the decision below. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bromberg. Mr. Smith.
Thank you again. Counsel for Experian has indicated to you how costly this might be for them to conduct an independent investigation and says that the law does not require them to conduct an independent investigation. That's not true. Section 1681IA4 says that with respect to disputed information in the file of any consumer, the consumer reporting agency shall review and consider all relevant information. It is a separate section that has them also notifying their subscriber or the person furnishing that information. This particular section puts a burden on them to conduct it themselves. In this instance, in the Henson case, which this court decided, the Henson case then said these companies with their wealth can then gather their resources and do something. In this case, what they did do was send this one consumer dispute verification form out to this company they have a contract with who's supposed to report back, and they will then trust them. What they could have done in this case, as I said in my original argument, is they could have simply notified the judgment creditor as well that somebody says that you haven't been paid your judgment. That would have cost no more and wasted no more time and taken nothing more of a resource from them than what they already did. It probably would have taken 30 seconds. And that, reasonable minds could have differed as to whether or not that was reasonable. And the fact that Experian engages in this conduct every single time they have a dispute like this indicates that the conduct is a reckless disregard for the rights of the consumer. And that is something that is a willful violation of the Act. There is a particular portion of this Act that they have decided not to comply with. And as a parting note, counsel did make an argument in their brief that they believe they're reporting this accurately with respect because there were also attorney's fees unpaid. If they're going to rely on this company who reports to them as being accurate, it appears that that company is reporting wrong, and that should be considered as well, as there is the judgment amount with the amount my client paid. See, I'm out of time. I want to thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Bromberg, thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.